the chief executioners of France, the Sanson family. Henri Clement Sanson takes over. Now, Henri Clement, whose natural pallor was accentuated by the somber black of his everyday attire, had become a familiar figure on the scaffold during the three decades of the 19th century. Parisians knew him as well, if not better, than his ailing father. It was common gossip that, whether he took part in an execution or merely observed the proceedings, ugly red blotches mottled his ashen countenance, and his entire body was racked by violent trembling. "No one is more miserable than I," the young man confessed quite openly. "When I receive my orders to perform an execution, I become feverish." The death of Henri Sanson in August of 1840 brought Henri Clement Sanson the title of executioner. For months he deliberated, dreamed of leaving the profession of his ancestors, freeing himself of the intolerable yoke. But at the age of 41, what else could he do to earn a living? He knew no other trade, and so on December the 1st, when he received formal notification of his appointment, he shrugged his shoulders. The die had been cast long before his birth. But from that moment on, he began to exhibit all the characteristics of a trapped animal. To profession he had loathed since childhood, the profession which was for him a life sentence, had become unbearable, and like many prisoners, he began searching for ways to escape. A natural taste for luxury grew to exaggerated proportions, as if he could blot the hated profession out of existence by spending money on horses and fancy carriages, collecting paintings, having his suits made by the most expensive tailors, excessive drinking, and card playing. He frequented houses of ill repute. He gambled, his losses so great that his wife became alarmed and pleaded with him to stop. But the unhappy man ignored the warnings of relatives and friends. He had been denied the right to choose his life work, but no one could deny him the right to escape when he so desired. It was during this period of his life that he decided to renovate the house, removing the iron grillwork and replacing it with an elegant oak doorway, and adding a glassed-in veranda, as if the changes in the outer appearance would lighten the darkness within himself. Unmindful, indifferent, oblivious to expenditures of money that were increasing at an alarming pace, Henri Clement not only left as much of his work as he dared to his aides, but gave up the practice of medicine. As a result, the family fortune which Henri had carefully built up and husbanded was rapidly vanishing. The 12,000 francs paid to the executioner had been reduced to 8,000 in 1832. In 1849, it would be cut again. Henri Clement's excesses were a constant source of concern and an increasing cause of friction in the household, which, like that of his father and grandfather, was a large one. Sheltering the impoverished relatives, his father's widow, his servants and aides, his wife had borne three children, but only two of them remained. The son, an only boy, was killed in infancy in a carriage accident near Brunei. In 1837, the older of the girls, Marie-Emily, born in 1818, married Jean-Nicolas Jouin, surgeon at the military hospital at Perpignan, son and grandson of executioners of Melun. The Jouins came from a long line of executioners, one of whom had married the first Sanson, others having plied their trade in Caen, Quebec-au-Cas, Arras, Évreux, Le Mans, Rouen, and Dinep. The children of this marriage, Marie Henriette and Paul Louis, grew up on the Ile de Saint-Louis in Paris, where their father practiced medicine. Henri Clement's grandchildren were a source of great pride to him, and he liked to boast that his daughter had married outside of the concierge. In 1845, the young daughter, Therese Clementine Antoinette, married Theodore Joseph Clarisse, a clerk, and is known that following her husband's death, she retired to a convent. She died in 1912 at the age of 85. Madame Sanson kept to herself because the marriage was not a happy one. The former Virginie Emilie Lefebvre would ultimately leave her husband and go to live with her daughter, Madame Jeannot, on the Ile de Saint-Louis, remaining there from about 1847 until her death in 1860. While Henri Clement drank and gambled and left most of his duties to his assistant, Pillot, France itself was growing tired of the July monarchy. Legitimist followers of Charles X sat in the rotting splendor of their mansions, in the Faubourg Saint-Germain and moaned about passing of privilege. The church, excluded from teaching in schools, opposed the king who supported godless institutions. Young Republicans discussed and yearned to emulate the glories of the past. Socialists put forth plans for a communist society, and the Bonapartists made snide comparison between the victories of the emperor and the mediocre do-nothing government of Louis-Philippe. The French were impatient with the status quo, eager and ready for change. In the inauguration of the Arc de Triomphe in 1836 and the raising of the obelisk of Luxor in the Place de la Concorde recalled proud memories of Napoleon's Grand Armée. When in 1840 his ashes were brought back from St. Helena and placed beneath the dome of the Invalides, the Republican zeal joined forces with socialist dreams and a new fusion party was born. The populace responded to this atmosphere of change and revealed itself more than receptive to new ideas and more than ready for a revolution that was rapidly taking shape. On ground as fertile as this, a campaign of abolition of capital punishment would gain momentum, bringing with it further reductions in the number of executioners and, again, the salaries that they were paid. Now, the sources for this, The Legacy of Death by Levy, The History of Capital Punishment by Scott, The Encyclopedia of Murder by Wilson, Collin, and Pittman, History of the Guillotine by Kershaw, Septgeneration Executionnaire, 1688-1847 by Henri Sanson, and Madame Tussaud's Memoirs by Madame Tussaud. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out the merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.